I certainly am happy to be able to be with you in this second speech of my affirmative tonight. And while Mr. Till's speech is fresh in our minds, I want to respond to it. And then as we have time, I'll get into more of my affirmative material. In the first part of his speech, Mr. Till referred to the Quran and suggested that if we were living in another culture, we might be debating the merits of that book instead of our being here to discuss the Bible. That's really just a little bit naive and simplistic, and it's based upon the notion that really our spiritual convictions are simply the product of our religious environment, or the environment in which we grow up. And that's really not true and is easily falsifiable by simply taking a survey of people. There are persons who have escaped the limits of their own culture. In fact, it reminds me of the debate in 1829, I believe it was, in Cincinnati, Ohio, between Alexander Campbell and Robert Owen, the atheist. And Owen suggested the same thing that Mr. Till had suggested, and he simply said that we're products of our environment. Some persons would say we're products of genetics and environment. But Mr. Campbell at that time pointed out that Robert Owen was a falsification of his own view, because he had not been raised to be an atheist, but somehow he overcame, turned against his religious upbringing, and turned out a skeptic, an atheist, of the atheist brand. And so really that's a demonstration of the falsifiability of Mr. Till's contention. I don't know whether or not he was brought up to be a skeptic. I haven't asked him about that. But perhaps he himself has overcome the limits of his own upbringing. So it's really a naive and simplistic suggestion to say that someone is just the product of his environment. And had we been raised in another culture, we would be discussing another book. Christianity did not start on this side of the world. It started on the other side. And I think that's a point that needs to be kept in mind. Ezekiel 18 in the Bible, of course, addresses that point. About five cases of individuals and situations are discussed in that chapter in the Bible. And throughout that material, the writer is saying that a person is responsible for his own convictions and does have the capacity to turn against the way he was trained or raised. Then Mr. Till suggested that he was somewhat disappointed in the way that I handled the Midianites and the Amalekites situation. Well, that's all right. My strategy is my own in this debate, and I'll carry on as I see fit. If he has an argument to make on the Amalekites and the Midianites, then I suggest that Mr. Till be on with it. Let him bring out his argument. We're not here just to assert, just to suggest, just to suppose or imagine, or just to talk about what seems to be the case. If he has an argument to make on those cases of alleged atrocity, then let him make the argument, and then I will respond to it at that time. And really, given the way that he answered my five questions at the beginning of our session, or before our session started tonight, he simply has nowhere to go. He's not in a position of criticizing anybody for anything on ethical grounds, much less God. And yet his criticism continues. You have to have an objective standard in order for anybody to be ethically criticizable. There has to be an objective standard against which their conduct can be gauged or measured. But in the answering of the questions tonight, Mr. Till, as he's done in the past, said there is no objective standard. And yet somehow, as a figment of his imagination, he gets God as a culprit. God becomes blameworthy. It's a fantastic program that he has. There's no way to measure objective right and wrong, and yet somehow God is still guilty of moral evil. That's in the program of Pharaoh Till. Really, ethics are not arbitrary. It's not a matter of arbitrary selection. Ethics, proper ethical conduct, is based on the nature of God. We have the will of God that comes to us, but it's based on the nature of God, and the nature of God decides what our conduct will be. Actually, Jean-Paul Sartre, a French existentialist, saw it correctly when he said, if there is no God, anything is permitted. Now, Farrell Till hasn't seen that yet. I hope shortly that he will see it. Now, when he was talking about the proposition, you recall I defined what I meant by the key terms in the proposition. When he got to the word alleged, he then suggested that I was taking the word alleged to refer to the historicity or the non-historicity of the recorded deeds. Now, that's not the way the proposition reads. The proposition reads regarding alleged moral atrocities. That is, that those accounts in the Bible that are asserted to be by some like Farrell Till, actual moral atrocities. When he got to the word alleged, he discussed it as though I were talking about it as if these were alleged historical deeds. No, I did not say that. I believe every account in Joshua, in the Old Testament record, this is sacred history, inspired literature, giving us account many times of action. And in all of these cases, dealing with the Amalekites, the Midianites, and the others, I take these as actual historical deeds. I did not question the historicity of them. What I'm calling in question, what I'm contesting in this debate, is the allegation that the deeds themselves constitute moral atrocities. That's what he's got to prove, and he can't do it. But that's what he's trying to prove. And really, the way the proposition is written, all I've got to do in this debate is to show why he has no basis upon which to criticize these deeds as actual moral atrocities at all. Then he said that I said that really without divine revelation that we cannot tell what's good or bad. Well, I did not say that. I did not say that we cannot understand any moral distinction at all without God stopping to give us a revelation. Now, I do have some brethren that say that. I do not say that. That's false. We can tell because we're made in the image of God. But now that's the key. And that's the very thing that Mr. Till has a question about. He's not even sure God exists. Since he's not sure that God exists, he cannot know that he's made in the image of God. But I'm saying, the Bible is saying, that since we are in God's moral image, we can at least at a fundamental level see or discern a basic moral distinction in a fundamental way between moral good and moral evil without special revelation. Now, that's not the end of the story, however. We do need more help by revelation, and revelation tells me what to do about all my misdeeds. I cannot deal with my sin simply by my basic fundamental insight into a major distinction between the category of moral right and the category of moral wrong. Even if I have that insight, that does not tell me what to do about the sins that I have in fact committed. And so once I make this point and I affirm this truth, it's not to say that that's the end of ethical discussion or of human responsibility, because there's more to the story than that. And so I have not said that. In fact, as I said a moment ago, as I said in the questions, he gave me questions, five tonight, and one of the questions had to do with this point. And in the answering of that question, I pointed out that it is the case that human beings can tell something about a moral distinction between right and wrong without revelation. And he had that answer to his question when he made his speech just a moment ago. And the answer that I gave to that question falsifies what he is representing me as now saying. And so that will not pass. But again, let me say that all of this is possible, that is our discernment of right and wrong at this fundamental level of experience, simply by being made in the image of God. Now, when I hear Mr. Till talking about hitting Kevin over the head with a chair, I do get the impression that on occasion he simply has in mind that evil is some sort of unpleasantness. He says, Well, you can just tell it's bad. Well, that's not quite good enough. He is sort of, he's giving evil as the equivalent of pain. But all pain is not bad. And there are criminals who think that sometimes things should not be done to them that a just society would say we have a right to do to them. Criminals would say, it's bad to catch me. It's bad to shoot me. It's bad to incarcerate me. You cannot go through ethical discussion thinking that evil is the equivalent of pain. That's just false. That's wrong. And yet when he talks about evil, he approaches it as though it is the equivalent of pain. And that just is not true. Now, in his answers to the questions, he has nowhere to go in his further criticism of the God of the Bible, because he says, in answer to the true-false questions, there is no objective moral standard. There is no objective moral standard. Now, please tell us then how in the world God gets to be really guilty. You see, all he's doing is saying that the God of the Bible has done some things that I, Farrell Till, don't like. That's all this amounts to so far in this discussion. And given the way he has answered it, it can't get any better. The way he's answered the five questions, he's already caught. He's undone. It can't go anywhere from here. God, the God of the Bible, has done some things that offend the sensitivity of Farrell Till, his delicacy, his moral delicacy, his sense of right and wrong, has been somehow offended, though there is no real right and wrong. There is no intrinsic right and wrong. There is no objective standard of right and wrong. And so it all reduces itself to the level of subjective approval or subjective disapproval. And since he doesn't like the way that God has done, therefore he concludes God really has done a bad thing, which is really much ado about nothing given his basic concept of right and wrong. Now, I didn't say that we couldn't make any distinction between right and wrong without revelation. Revelation, Romans 5, verses 12 and following, and Ephesians 6, 1 are two passages in the New Testament where the writers give us a distinction between two types of law, regardless of what you call them. You have two types, two basic fundamental types of law. We usually use the word moral law and positive law. These expressions will do to catch the kinds of laws we're talking about. Moral law has to do with the nature of things. That is, somehow there is responsibility or obligation that's ingrained in the nature of relationships. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. In the nature of things, you can see that, given the relationship of parents and children, you see. And yet you can have pure positive ordinances, like remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, where you could not for the life of you figure out any kind of obligation like that simply by understanding natural relationships, man to man or man to God. So the Bible makes that distinction, and I regard that distinction, of course, as correct, as true. I give deference to that distinction. In fact, it is because we can discern something about good and evil by being made in the image of God, that puts us in position to evaluate the God of the Bible and the devil of the Bible, and to evaluate right conduct and bad conduct. If we weren't made in the image of God and did not have that kind of insight into fundamental moral distinction, you couldn't tell God from the devil when you read about the Bible. Now, Mr. Till thinks he's caught God. He hasn't, but he thinks he has. The very fact that he's made in the image of God gives him a basis upon which he can evaluate God. And I do not criticize him for evaluating God. What I criticize him for is for reaching a conclusion that he had no right to reach regarding God. The Bible teaches you can never get to that point where you can properly criticize God as being blameworthy for anything. Moral insight has to be grounded. When I grant that in Romans 2, the Gentiles did by nature things that were written in the law, which Paul says they did, that would mean, though, that if they were really doing right, if they were really doing moral right, for that to be objectively correct, that insight that they had in the moral right would have to have a foundation. It would have to have a grounding. You have to root it somewhere. What would be the justification for their contention that they were in fact doing some morally good deeds? Mr. Till, in his reducing ethics to physics and chemistry, has no foundation for ethics. He has reduced ethics to mud. In his answers to the questions tonight, he said that value is simply a matter of empirical investigation. That all values reduce themselves to matters of physics and chemistry. That's what his answer implied. And so he has no metaphysical, personal, infinite foundation to base ethics on. And yet, somehow, in spite of that tremendous failure, he still holds God guilty of something in the Bible. Moral insight has to be grounded. If I'm not in the image of God, and if I think I have discerned something, a distinction between moral right and moral wrong, my question is, what puts me under binding authority to do what I think I've seen in that insight? Now you think about Romans 2:14 and 15 and the Gentile case where they were by nature doing things that the Jews were doing by revelation. Now if a Gentile did that, and they were, how in the world was he obligated to do what he thought he saw he should do morally? What constitutes the binding authority, you see? He has no answer for that. His program is devoid of a sufficient answer to that question. Now, these Gentiles became a law unto themselves by doing these things. We cannot reduplicate that historic era. There's no way we can become a law unto ourselves. But if we can have that same insight that they had, it has to be based on the fact that we, like they, were made in the image of God. And we don't have any obligation to that insight unless there is a God. That alone could constitute the binding authority. So again, the question, what puts me under binding authority to do what I think I have seen I should do? Now that's an important question to which he has no answer. He's already reduced ethics to physics and chemistry, making ethics tentative and subjective. So he can't criticize me for anything ethically, much less God. And yet the accusations continue. Now he wants me to explain how the Gentiles in Romans 2:14 and 15 could do by nature things that are written in the law. Well, I'll explain that they could only do that by being in the image of God. He wants people to be able to do that without being in the image of God. He has presented himself here as an agnostic. He wants to claim to have an insight into the distinction between moral right and wrong and get God out of the picture. That's not the case in Romans 2:14 and 15. Those Gentiles had insight because they were in the image of God. And so when he tries to get us to have some sort of objective clarity regarding moral right and moral wrong without God, it's not quite parallel to the case discussed in Romans 2:14 and 15 at all. As I said, Jean-Paul Sartre saw it, if you remove God, if God is not there, anything is permitted. Farrell Till wants to say, God doesn't have to be there, and yet you can still have some sort of system of right and wrong. Well, whatever system you come up with, it's not objective. There's no intrinsic good and no intrinsic evil in it at all. Now I discussed conscience. In my questions to him, I asked him about his epistemology, and he said that the only way that you could know anything is by your five senses. I asked him how he knew, or if he knew he had a conscience. He said he did. Now think about that. He says he has a conscience. But the only way you can know you have anything or know anything is by your five senses. Has he had physical sensation of his conscience? And he suggested that when I asked him about his conscience, that I avoided asking him whether or not he had felt his conscience. I did not avoid that. I asked him, I said, have you touched your conscience? In fact, I did use the expression feeling. I said, how do you explain the feeling of guilt you've had? So that's not correct to say that I avoided asking him about feeling. But now, there's something else that has to be said about this, because you have to be very, very clear-minded as to how you're using that word feeling. He has not felt his conscience in any physical way. Has he touched his conscience like you can touch the stand? No. Pharaoh Till hasn't touched his conscience. He hasn't seen it or heard it or smelt it. He's not. He's not tasted it. Any experience he's had with conscience has been other than by the five senses. And yet he says that's the only way he can tell if he's got it. Now, you can have a pang of conscience, but it's not like having a physical sensation. There can be a physical effect produced in the physical system, but that has to do with the way that your mind and body operate together. But he's not felt his conscience in any physical sense. It's only in a metaphysical sense. The feelings of guilt and approval that you feel inside your mind, these are metaphysical things, not physical. And yet he would talk about that as though these are simply reducible to physical qualities. And they're not. But given the way he's answered the questions, as I've said, he's already reduced the whole of ethics to a matter of physics. And so he reduces morality to mere mud. Now, he asks why we should allow the God of the Bible to do things that we would not allow our neighbor or the government to do. Well, the response to that is, we can do that because God and my neighbor and government are not exactly on the same ontological footing. And by that I simply mean they do not have the same footing in actuality, in being. The Bible teaches that God has the highest claim on existence, on being as such. Ontology has to do with being. We are here as secondary characters. God has bestowed being on us. We weren't here first. God has always been here. He inhabits eternity. But he bestows being on others. It's so complex a matter, you've got to talk about it accommodatively. I say he gives being to others. The others aren't there to get it yet. But he gives being to us. And he arranges circumstances so that we can have an individual and a family and a nation and a world with regulation and government. But the Bible teaches that God has this highest, this ultimate claim on existence. He's the ultimate moral nature. And thus, he's the ultimate moral regulator of all human affairs. And so, I could allow some things from the viewpoint of God or on the part of God that I cannot allow my neighbor to do or my government to do because we're simply not on the same ontological footing at all. The ultimate nature is God. And remember that Till only knows anything, anyway, he says, by the five senses. Now, what kind of a principle is that anyway? What he's saying is, what he's implying is, God at no time has any right to do anything that a man can't do. And that's what he's saying. He didn't exactly say it that way, but that's what it is. Now, where did he get that concept? Where did that theory come from? There is no philosophical principle that he's drawing on. There's nothing to go to. There's no justification for that kind of a statement, that God at no time has any right to do anything that a human being cannot do. That's simply the product of the imagination of the agnostic Pharaoh Till. Mr. Till, if God creates, why can't he terminate? He's discussed the case of the Amalekites and the Midianites. The Bible clearly shows that the God of the Bible is the creator of the Midianites, the Amalekites. That is, he's the creator of Adam and Eve, through whom they finally got here, just as all of us have done. Now, if God is actually the creator, why cannot he be a terminator of individuals or societies as the historical situation may demand? The Bible teaches he has every right to do that. Where does Pharaoh Till get the right to say God has no such right? Again, I say, there is no philosophical principle, there's no theological principle that he can draw on in order to justify this theory that he's trying to impose on the God of the Bible. Now, he also, in his speech, suggested that some of the accounts of these deeds in the Bible may not, in fact, be accurate. How would he know that? Remember, he's got this five-point plan of knowledge. He is an empiricist, epistemologically. And that means that he has cut himself off forever in this discussion from any historical literary past. He can't, in this debate, refer to any historical document ever as a proof or disproof of anything. There is no way that he can properly assess history by literature, given his ridiculous and overly restrictive epistemology. And as I said earlier, the accounts of actions recorded in the book of Joshua and the other Old Testament books discussing Israel's relationship with her neighbors is a good history, and it's inspired testimony as well. But Mr. Till, in this discussion, given his epistemology, has no historical literary past. Now, I think that just about covers his speech. I want us to think about some more affirmative material. Well, I can have Kevin chart 8, please. I want us to think about, as much as we can right here in the time left, why God cannot be immoral. Now, think about the assignment that Mr. Till has given himself. In this discussion, it all hinges on his proving that God had no moral right to do the things that he did in the Old Testament accounts of historical action that are ascribed to him. Why can't God be immoral? First of all, nothing can be objectively immoral unless God exists. If you take the objective, the ultimate, the actual, a metaphysical and infinite and personal nature of God out of the picture, then anything goes. You have no standard against which you can measure right and wrong on the earth. It simply would reduce itself to a matter of subjective taste, that right becomes what you want and wrong becomes what you don't want. You throw the world into chaos. If God is not there, as Sartre said, anything goes. Now, Pharaoh Till hasn't admitted that yet. He does not want that to be a conclusion that he has to face. He does not want to face a world like that. But I say logically that he would have to face that kind of conclusion given his posture regarding ethics and regarding objective standard. Then look at the second point. If God exists, his nature would have to be the basis for what is or is not immoral. The Bible teaches that the ultimate moral nature in being is the nature of God himself. We are here as secondary creatures. We are dependent. We have a moral nature. It's made in his image, but we are finite creatures. And we have weaknesses that do not characterize the God of the Bible. But if God is there, and if God is our creator, as the Bible says he is and as he is, then his nature would have to constitute the standard against which our conduct is measured. But then number three, for God to be immoral, he would have to violate his own nature. Now that's the only route open to Pharaoh Till. If he's going to be able to show that the God of the Bible has actually violated a standard and actually done wrong in any real intrinsic sense, he's got to get up here and show that God has in fact violated his own nature. Now, how does Pharaoh Till have insight into the nature of God? The only way that he has any insight into that fundamental distinction between right and wrong morally is because he's made in the image of God. And then he's got to, after understanding that, realize that God has violated that insight. But when he, as an agnostic, puts God out of the picture and then charges God with ethical fault, he is doing something that is very, very wrong. He does not understand the implications of his own message when he answers the question, there is no objective standard. And yet he thinks somehow, some way, that God gets to be blameworthy. How do you have insight into the moral arena? How is it that you're not exactly like your dog? I'm not like my dog. How does that work? The only explanation for that is that there is a higher being. There is a higher nature that made it possible for me to ask questions about right and wrong, and to pursue proper conduct, and to expose wrong conduct, to have discussions like this. The only answer is that I am, in fact, made in the image of God. But if Farrell Till in this discussion cannot prove that God has actually violated that insight, which would mean then, just discussing God himself, that he's violated his own nature, Farrell Till has failed in this discussion. Thank you.